Maybe it was like their way of saying, hey, here are all of these fancy oils that we are giving to your son. You know, all these oils that have some very specific meanings about death.
I mean, the Messiah had a whole plan.
Tell me how you're going to kill the Messiah without telling me that you're going to kill the Messiah.
Okay, like 75% of me is mad at you right now. Hey, Applauders. My name is Naomi McQuaid.
My name is Jen McQuaid.
And I'm Lydia Malcolm. And you know what movie we're doing because you clicked on the thing.
Is this even a movie?
It's less than an hour.
It's a made-for-TV movie. I'm sure with commercials, it must have ran 2.5 hours. But for you, Applauders,
you can watch it free on YouTube.
For 48 minutes and 8 seconds of your life.
It's less than an hour long.
So what is it?
It's the best Christmas pageant ever from 1983. Woo!
Woo!
Woo. Oh, the enthusiasm.
I feel like we're progressively maybe getting worse at our Christmas movies. Like, I don't know, because we started off with Die Hard.
I mean, if you're saying that this is worse than Santa Claus Conquers the Martians, I mean, I'm not going to fight you on it.
Oh, meh.
It has more Jesus in it this time than the previous two times.
Right. So a little bit of background, Applauders. I chose this month's movie. This is a movie that is near and dear to my heart. But if you don't like it, as in the people listening to it right now, you don't have to, because I really just wanted to do something short, I think, for December. We normally take so long on the podcast.
We do kind of need a little break.
A little shortness to catch our breath and Jen's poor editing fingers.
Yeah, lately I've been working a lot and I'm on a deadline at work. So it's kind of nice to have something that'll probably be maybe 2 episodes, maybe an episode and a half.
Or it's 3 episodes, but they're only like 20 minutes apiece. So
right.
Bless your commute, Applauders.
Maybe I just fill it up with a whole bunch of commercials or previews. For other podcasts.
They say that all you need to do to make something sound like Christmas is to put the ch-ch-ch-ch bells behind it.
Yeah.
Ding dong, ding dong.
Not those ones.
I know.
The sleigh bells.
Yeah.
But also those ones.
Also, there's a lot of royalty-free music. So if you just take some like sleigh bells and then just sing jingle bells, you know, that would fill up a lot of time. And that probably wouldn't take forever to edit.
Probably be easier for me to pull out Naomi's kalimba.
It was an investment, Jen, that will pay off when I get very bored.
One day.
Okay, so Lydia, do you feel like we've understood how you've come to this movie, or are there extra details?
It was just a staple in my house growing up in a conservative Pentecostal home. It was like, yeah, this one is something that you can watch. And I don't know if my parents really realized that it was kind of this message of you can't judge a book by its cover. But maybe sometimes you can.
I quizzed my mom after watching it with y'all, and she was like, I watched it and you would walk in and out of the room, but I was 9 months old when this movie came out. So it was definitely like reruns if I ever saw it. It seems so incredibly familiar, but like I certainly wouldn't have watched something with a kid who smoked in it.
I was kind of surprised that, like, I remember we had this on VHS, and this was back in the day where if something was playing on VHS, you recorded it off the television.
This was originally an ABC movie. I've got some Sean facts about it.
Hey, so I came to it ambiguously, but it was there. But like this watching was my first real thorough study. And it was part of your staple set. Jen, do you have any connection?
I'm sure that I've seen this as a play. It wasn't the musical, but it was definitely a stage thing. My mom and my grandma have a thing of going out to see theater, live theater, every once in a while. And I must have begrudgingly said, yeah, okay. But this was the first time that I have seen the movie, this movie.
There was a musical?
Yeah, there's a musical.
I see it right there. Gateway Church. And I know a Gateway Church. I don't think it's the same Gateway Church. Anyway, sorry.
Once it was adapted to a musical, I'm sure that that took over as the predominant way to do it on stage.
Mm-hmm. The main theme is smoking in the boys' room.
I like that song. Nowadays, that like really bumps up the age level that they'll tell you on the top left corner of the TV.
Uh-huh. It really informs the parental rating.
80s movies. You could get away with a lot of back then.
True. So let's launch into some Sean facts. I hear there are only a smattering this time.
Yes, yes, a smattering. Best Christmas Pageant Ever came out in 1983. It aired on ABC on December 5th, 1983. It stars Loretta Swift, who was Hot Lips from MASH, and also a really young Firouza Balk in her acting debut. We have seen Firouza Balk or discussed Firouza Balk in all of her glorious goodness in The Return to Oz. And it was based on a book of the same name by Barbara Robinson, who also wrote the screenplay, and that was released in 1971. The story appears to be a modern-day reimagining of the medieval Second Shepherd's Play, the surname Herdman being a thinly disguised synonym of Shepherd. You ready for some more?
Yeah.
All right. Land? Usually by this time, it's like, we can't stop the commentary.
The Herdsman. Oh my gosh. The Herdsmen all become shepherds?
No, they become wise men.
That seems like a real missed opportunity. Mm-hmm. If it was called the Herdsmen and then the Herdsmen's becomes the wise men's.
There's that commentary you were talking about, Jen.
All right. Wiseman, isn't that a Jewish name?
More like wise guys, am I right?
Okay. Both of you. Back out the door.
The book was adapted by Robinson into a play, which was first performed on November 26, 1982. So it did actually come out as a play first. And that was by the Seattle's Children's Theater.
Woo woo!
Oh, yeah, represent hometown.
In fact, I think that's where I saw this, was the Seattle Children's Theater.
Jen saw it at the debut?
No, I would have been one. I'm sure because it debuted there, though, that they've done it reoccurring for several years now. Maybe not in the last couple of years, depending on...
Right. COVID?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could just see a whole bunch of people being like, this is a church play. Why are you asking me to see my vaccination card? Like, all right, I won't go there, but I did. The Herdsmen were featured in two sequels, The Best Halloween Ever and The Best School Year Ever.
With like the same cast?
Same characters?
Yeah. Did I say Herdsmen? I meant Herdmans.
Oh.
I don't know, but it is Herdmans. There is a musical version which premiered in 2016 at the Children's Theater of Charlotte. The book is titled The Worst Kids in the World in Australia and the United Kingdom. It was first published in McCall's magazine before it was adapted into a book. And Sean has one additional how he came to this movie. He read this book as a kid, but he had never actually seen the movie before.
It's in everyone's life. I do not regret this decision.
I want you to continue to not regret the decision for those 2.5 hours.
All right. Are we ready to dive into the plot?
I will say this is my shortest grouping of notes ever.
I have like a larger notebook. So like, for example, Barbarella took up like 3 pages. This barely took up 2.
I have a smaller notebook and it took 2.5 pages. So.
All right.
Should we start with the title card?
Do,
it looks like a Christmas card from like 1970 something.
It's got this little toe-headed girl with blowing bubbles, and she's got like wings and a halo, and it's just very like kitschy.
And then we cut to one of 3 persons of color in the entire film hanging up, doing a menial job of hanging up Christmas decorations, like uniform. The whole town's gearing up for Christmas.
Yeah.
No, we don't have any timelines for this entire... there are 4 rehearsals, but we don't have any solid timelines for this entire film. And it hurts my brain because I'm like, working with children, 4 rehearsal times, maybe a month, month and a half, mm-hmm. maybe. So,
yeah.
You're really only doing this like on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Yeah. But the first real scene is a Sunday school class with all these kids and this very jolly woman who's asking everybody, what's your favorite thing about Christmas?
What are you thankful for?
Oh, yeah. What are you thankful
for? So I'm feeling like it's around Thanksgiving-ish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they all start rattling off these things. I didn't even bother to list them because
they're so generic. I mean, these are kids that we're talking about, so they're not going to be like, I'm thankful for, you know, Reagan era economics.
I'm thankful for the decreasing patriarchy and the increasing validation of women's opinion in media.
Yeah.
I'm here for the them, theys, and gays.
The important kid that we need to know is there's like this kid who's surrounded by all these other kids, and the teacher's like, what's one last thing that someone can be thankful for? And she's like, Charlie. What about you? Charlie isn't raising his hand, by the way.
Yeah, he stands up in his little suit, his little car salesman suit, and is just like, I'm glad there's no Herdmans here.
Yeah.
She turns around to write it down.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, hmm. She turns around and gives like a face like, hmm. He's like, well, they're not.
Yeah.
I was noticing all the little boys are in suits and all the little girls are. Did you notice? I don't know if you had one of these. I inherited one from my sister, but it's the kind of little girl dress that has like two big poofy ribbon sleeves off mm-hmm. the side. And I'm not exactly sure what you call that, but it's awful.
I remember there was the hand-me-down dress, and I remember when I got too big to fit into it again, but there were like probably 7 different layers of fruffles in the dress itself, and I felt so girly and so pretty.
Oh,
yeah.
I hated wearing my sister's. It was my grandma made it, so it was gorgeous, but it was navy blue with red trim.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That mine was like a sky blue with white trim.
Okay. That's cute as
Yeah. But also I was like, when I was younger, I was like, I want to be just like my sister's. So whenever I got one of their hand-me-downs, I felt like I'm just like them. I was a weird youngest sibling.
Yeah. I didn't have that. My sister and I were very different sizes.
Mm-hmm.
I liked that dress for like the one time I wore it to like the dentist and then I was done.
Right.
So to see all these little girls in that same dress, it must be the same pattern mm-hmm. all the way through the 80s.
They just recycle it throughout the entire church.
There's only 5 of that dress and we all got to wear it 3 times.
Yeah.
I just remember Sunday school being the time that I wasn't allowed to wear sweatpants. Like I didn't really dress up. None of the McQuaid boys or children really dressed up at all, and we fought our way to always try not to go to church, and it became like this, I don't know, difficult thing every Sunday morning to get all of the McQuaid children awake.
We were required to, and we did dutifully. It was the time I got to wear my pretty shoes, but my feet grew so fast that like they were never quite right. The back of my heels were raw every Sunday for the entirety of my childhood.
We pretty much did the same song and dance until my parents couldn't pay for private education and we had to go to public school. So
that's how we met.
Yeah.
Aww.
It was great. But I know that like
thanks, inflation.
My dad was the kind of guy who wore like a nice outfit to go get his picture taken at the DMV. So like I kind of grew out of that real quick as soon as I realized that I preferred comfort over fashion.
I really can't. But we stopped going to church about the time I was in first or second grade. And I didn't go back until I was like in 7th grade and it was like my choice. And then I was just a punk teenager. So like, whatever.
Right.
I don't know.
So outside of all of what these kids are wearing, that's when we get. Sorry.
I got one.
Okay, go for it.
I got a question.
Go for it.
On a scale of let's not talk about it at all and us talking way too much about it, how much religious trauma are we going to bring into this podcast?
I did not. This is supposed to be a short podcast.
Okay.
We have to not talk about.
Okay.
So, we can save it for like January.
I have another question.
Okay. So hold on. Just to make sure. Yeah. We're like a 2. Do not go above 2 in your trauma level of religion experience.
Are we going to give our Patreon applauders their dollar worth and insert as many swear words as we can into this Christmas-themed episode?
Yes!
I don't know if that's what the Patreon's all about. I just thought it was a shout it out to us like, hey, thanks for doing all this production value. Here's a dollar. I didn't think it was more like a, give me all the f- you got. I want all the f**ks. Like, is that it? Is that what that is? If it is, hey, thanks for the dollar. But like, I would have assumed was not the case.
Holy f***ing balls. We haven't even hit the first... How...
It's just like that you split up the swearing from The Good Place into like halfway there and halfway not, because it's holy forking shirt balls. Holy f***ing shirt balls.
Balls.
You said shirt balls. Did you say shirt balls?
I said holy f***ing balls.
Oh. Sorry, okay. I'm with you. That's ridiculous.
After the scene, it cuts to Charlie being at home and his mom chastising him for saying something so like frank and to the point. And I'm like, my first note was, Charlie tells it like it is. He's a future Republican.
Also, he jinxes the whole thing and makes this movie a possibility by saying.
Mm-hmm. He truly does. He truly does. And then who's the mom?
Oh, the mom is Hot Lips Houlihan, a.k.a. Loretta Swift. She says, oh, they can't be that bad. And that's when we pan over to Firouza Balk, who's Charlie's sister. And I don't even know. She has a name, right?
Probably, but she directs to camera.
She's like the narrator of this entire thing. But you know what?
I don't hate her narration. I will tell you that much.
Those big, big eyes looking into the camera.
The matter of factness of the way she speaks.
Her name is Beth. I don't know. Like, I can't tell you how many times I've watched this movie and I never knew that. I don't know if they say it.
The only name you remember is Emma Jean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We haven't got there yet.
But then the camera looks right to her and she says, deadpan, oh, but it was a good thing that he said that. And this is all of the reasons why the Herdmans are bad.
Right. So she starts listing off what terrible kids they are. And then like within, 3 minutes of the film, they blow up a shed.
With a chemistry set that they bought from the store.
They stole it.
Oh, they stole it from the store.
Yeah.
Because they're bad.
That's only in the movie version. In the play version, it's a meth house.
They like blow up a meth house?
No, I'm just giving you the real grit.
We have such a hard time with just explaining the truth.
Okay, so this is from a child's point of view. How do we not know that it wasn't a meth lab? And her parents were just like, yeah, they probably just stole it. All of the adults are just like, they stole a chemistry set. And so it was meth.
Here's the thing. I have had a chemistry set, right? You can't do anything more. I mean, I mixed everything. The weirder the color, the weirder it smelled, the more I mixed it together. I never got more than a baking soda vinegar fizz or a color change.
What's that called? Emulsification? Is that something different?
Emulsification is when you combine a like an oil and water.
Oh.
That's just a joining of two liquids that don't normally combine, but with like friction. You can combine things to be an emulsified liquid, like a vinaigrette, or like mayonnaise.
So these kids were making...
I don't know food science.
These kids were making olive oil.
And then it exploded. Yeah, but in
That's probably close enough.
Yeah. Firouza Balk's character kind of goes through all of the things like, oh, and this is their backstory and their dad ran off and they're sometimes you see their mom walking the cat on a leash around the block.
On a long chain, but she works two shifts at the shoe factory or whatever. Yeah. So you never see her much. But remember, before that, they're in the tree. She's in the tree with the two other girls and they're like, they need to send her to jail, them to jail. And she's like, they won't send them to jail because they just blow up the jail.
Yeah. So there are three kids there and it's like, someone should call the police and send them to jail. They can't call the police and send them to jail because they're kids. No, because they'd burn down the jail.
Right. Miss Herdman walking her cat is mood. And I want her to know specifically, I see you.
Mm-hmm. Also, she had to work two jobs and she had six kids to raise.
Yeah.
And she was a single parent. Also, I kind of wonder, like, their dad stuck around to have six kids and then he picked up and left. I'm a little, that seems a little suspicious to me. Like, what if he died? And everybody just in the town is like, no, he totally left you. Instead of the fact, like, this is my conspiracy theory for the movie.
I love a conspiracy. Go for it.
So the Herdman children, they live in like this factory looking building with like a garage that goes up and down, up and down.
It's two stories. It's a pretty big house.
Right. But here's my thing. It looks dilapidated. It looks run down, which is what happens when you have property and you can't take care of it because you're working two jobs. What if Mr. Herdman went missing for some reason and Mrs. Herdman is like, no. We need to find him. And she works two jobs in an effort to try and find her husband, all the while trying to feed six kids because this is in 1983. I don't know how it was in Canada, but it may have just been filmed in Canada. It could have taken place anywhere in the U.S., which if it was in U.S., it was Reagan era economics. And that's all just like double middle fingers to any single parent who's raising six kids. They're like, no, you have to work two jobs. Anyways, she's probably going ahead and trying to work all these hours in an effort to not only find her husband, but take care of her kids. And nobody in the town is willing to go ahead and help her except for the one welfare lady. And all she can do is go ahead and give them a ham once a year.
Those are all the resources allocated to the second piece. Well, actually, I guess there's four persons of color in this film. Sorry for miscounting earlier. Mm-hmm. But it goes guy putting up decorations and then lady whose name I don't know, who's the welfare person.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the Asian girl who's talking with Beth and Alice. And then there's this other little kid later on that we're going to talk about because there's this like, anyways, there's this moment.
Yeah.
Anyways, but like, there's also, they're kind of setting up the Herdmans to be very low class. And because of the fact that they're low class, they are worthy of our...
No doubt they are jerks.
Right.
But here's the thing. When you got nothing, you do what works. And sometimes what works, a lot of times what works, is being a jerk. So they set up the kids to be bullies. And the oldest kid, he's stealing like the lunch of the kid, right? Mm-hmm. Of what's his face?
Right before that, she does, for Isabel's characters, like just to sum up how the rest of the town sees the Herdmans, is that we all thought they were on a one-way ticket to hell.
Via the penitentiary system.
Yeah.
Dark. Okay.
That's some propagandist bull.
I mean, well, we could talk about the private prison system, but like that might go on the, we're not getting outraged at the things we cannot control about this film. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it goes to gym class, right?
Yeah.
And dude,
does it talk? Does it?
Yes.
I thought it jumped to the Sunday school lady breaking her leg.
Nope, because my notes say guilt pageantry. And by that, I mean, kid is like so the Herdman kid is sitting on the bench and our main family kid walks up to him and is like, give me my lunch. Because he's been stealing his lunch. And he goes, where's my dessert? And he's like, what did you have for dessert? He goes, two brownies. And the brat kid is like, yeah, two brownies. Because he ate them, right? And he's like, fine. You can take all the brownies you want. And this is one of the best parts of the movie. Because it's guilt pageantry. He's guilt churching, whatever. He's all like, I get all the treats I want at church. And the pastor gives them to me because he's rich. And I get them all the time, every time I go. And they're delicious. And you can't, because you don't go to church, you don't get any. And he's all like, the guy like practically strokes his chin. He's like, ah.
This is like the greatest effort of proselytization. Because you're basically saying, not only are you a horrible person, but you will never get what I have because I go to church and like, you should go to church so you get the thing.
I want to be mad at it, but like...
So at what point do we get the news that the lady broke her leg, the Sunday school teacher broke her leg, and everybody's like running around trying to fill her
immediately
shoes?
Now. So...
Okay.
So she's like, she's going to do the pageant, right? Mm-hmm. Tells the kid if he wants the treats, he got to go to church, right? And then it goes to the leg breaking sequence. And I call this scene leg breaking and deal making.
Okay.
So what happens is the church ladies commence. And I don't know if you've ever been in a breakdown of like church ladies working business out as goes down, but it is masterful. Okay. In more organized places, they have like a phone tree, right? Mm-hmm. I never had that. So like something would go down and there was a hierarchy. It would go like the pastor's wife, and then it would go to me because I was the assistant pastor's wife, and then I would call the various ladies, and then the various ladies would assign their children things, and the various children things would hook their friends into the things. And by the time we were a very small church, mm-hmm. when I did this kind of thing, but watching these women be like, and she broke her leg, and we have to take care of the potluck. And she was in charge of the pageant. And who's going to take care of the pageant? Blah, blah, blah. And it's just, you work out all the details. And it really is masterful reorganization of assigned tasks and not dereliction of duties, but like a diffusement of duties. There's a big D word that I'm trying to think of. If you can think of the big D to give me, let me know. No, just kidding. Okay. But
delegation?
Yes! High fives. Okay. So the delegation of duties through that system, when done well, is fantastic because you're like, this person is out of commission. They got the flu. They have to get their tonsils out. Their leg is broken. Whatever, right? You're like, okay, she was in charge of these specific things. I know you've got these tasks. Can you take on making sure that communion is set up? Okay. Can you be in charge of the potluck for this Sunday? I'll do PM service if you can do AM service because I have to take over Sunday school, right? Like it's choo-choo-choo-choo-choo-choo. And it's very natural in the system to complete those tasks. But from the outside, it looks like crazy town. And that's what I think they communicated actually very well.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a kind of neat way to do a little bit of exhibition, too. So you don't have to go through all the scenes of someone breaking their leg and figuring out.
Yeah, you understand this woman is heavily involved in the church. She's got more than one task to take care of. And then it takes more than one person to take care of those tasks on top of their own duties.
Also, I like how they showed her personality. She's getting wheeled out of her house and she's like, oh, and don't forget to tell Frank about this. And don't forget about this. And don't forget about this. Oh, and don't forget about this.
Turn down the thermostat. Make sure he eats the ham and the chicken in the fridge. Make sure that Henrietta calls XYZ on Tuesday to make sure that blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
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 It's hilarious. She's obviously, she's a chatty Kathy, though. Like her mouth goes, she's a caricature of a woman, which hurts and is true.
Yeah.
Very A-type personality, too.
I don't know.
So during the phone conversation after the scene where everybody's like, well, I can't do this. I can't only, or I can do the bazaar. You can do the potluck. But who's going to do the pageant? And everybody's like, Grace. Grace can do the pageant. Oh, yes, Grace can do the pageant.
So then she like throws herself back in a chair and she's like, well, guess who has to do the pageant now?
And who is Grace but Hot Lips?
Yeah. It's
Loretta Swift.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the lady's like, remember what I always tell them, there's no small parts, there's only small actors. And I hate that.
Yeah.
Because you know what's really great about decreasing a kid's anxiety? Hey, honey, all you have to do is this.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. All I have to do is that? Yes.
Right.
As a child, all I have to do is that? You have one line. Mm-hmm. You just do that line best you can. You're golden.
Mm-hmm.
Not like, you have one line. It's so important.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no. But I mean, that comes later, I suppose.
After she collapses in the chair, she asks her husband if he can help with anything. And he's like, well, you have my sympathy. And she's like, is that all that you're going to give me? And he's like, no, you can also have my bathrobe. She's like, anything else? And I'm like, no, sympathy and a bathrobe.
Okay, I may have gotten this mixed up because guilt pageantry in my notes then is followed by the leg breaking, deal making, traction, no small actors, and then desert them into church. So.
Well,
sorry, I fed up, but like guilt pageantry, I think made the mom do all the things. I think because all this stuff that this other lady had to do, but still deserting right. people in church is deserting in both ways that you can spell the word desert,
right? I think even like at some point before they start really like getting into the weeds of the pageant, Grace has another phone call with Helen because I have a note in here that says, right move, Grace. Even Dad is getting involved because her husband was all like, I don't want to go. And, you know, it's not that big of a deal to me. But then they have this dinner and Grace is on the phone with Helen and she's like, Helen, I gotta go to the door. Helen, I gotta go to the door. And she literally has to hang up on the lady because mm-hmm. she cannot get a word in edgewise. And when Grace gets to the table, she's like, yes. And the kids were talking because they do this play over and over again. Mm-hmm. They were like, oh, yeah. And someone needs to make sure that the shepherds don't hit each other. And she was like, Helen thought that would be a great job for your father. And he was like, you mean I have to get involved now?
Yes. And while they're sitting at the table, that's when the kid dude takes like four pieces of chicken and they're like, why are you so hungry? And that's mm-hmm. why it led to the dessert of the guy. And so then, so after he's all like, oh yeah, all the cake, that's when we get to all of the six kids, the Herdman kids, mm-hmm. sitting in a pew at church looking dirty and bored. And like, Beth is judgy the whole time. And I get it. But like, something about, I don't like to vilify little girls anymore. I'm over it. Like, just like between the ages of 8 and 18, I feel like we portray little girls as being like these judgy little b****s. And yeah, they've got opinions, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can be difficult to deal with. But like, they're still little girls.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that they make her like, look at those Kens over there. Like, just so terrible. Like, when they came in, the coffers were full and then the coffers were empty.
Right. She pretty much is narrating. And through this narration, she talks about how they stole from the collection plates.
Uh-huh.
They scribbled all over the Bibles mm-hmm. and then they stuck them all over the pews.
Yeah.
Which, like, wonderfully acted by Firuza Balk, even with just her face and her body position. You can tell she was just like, I am so over the Herdmans right now.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm still a little mad about it because I mean, if I if I knew kids were unchurched, mm-hmm. I was much less inclined to be that jerky kid towards them. I'm like, you don't know. Okay, here's a little piece of scrap paper. Put your gum on that. Throw it out when you're done.
Mm-hmm.
Collection plates are a difficult place to mm-hmm. perform a lot of judgments, but like, why your eyes on the collection plate? Mm-hmm. Was that your job?
Yeah.
No? Okay. You know, like...
It's also weird to see someone that you've had a huge crush on as a tiny little kid.
Yeah. I rewatched Casper, the Friendly Ghost, a few years ago with a 12-year-old girl in the room. And I had a huge thing for Devon Sawa back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, right?
Yeah.
So then like, but then me as like a 30-something watching it, I was like, oh, him's them's baby.
Yeah.
Ew.
Yeah.
Ew.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird thinking about that.
Yeah. Sorry, honey. Those are just complicated feelings you could have to deal with. She's baby.
Yeah.
The neglect is brimming off of these children.
Okay, but Emma Jean sitting in that, she is a baby angel.
Yeah.
She's sitting in the pew. I love her so much.
Okay, I didn't write down all of their names, but like for how many times I've seen this movie, I wonder if I can go ahead and rattle off all of the names. So, because this is when Fairuza Balk's character goes ahead and rattles them off, and there's Leroy, Claude, Ollie, Gladys, Imogene, and Ralph.
I was kind of clocking Imogen when she had that hat on. She looked very...
Oh, she looks like a little dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like, I like that. I very much, if I hadn't grown up in like the later 80s, where everything was like color assigned, I wouldn't have worn so much pink. I would have loved a little blue hat like she got.
Imogen kind of reminds me of like this 1920s gangster, like, rah, see? Here we go, kids. She reminds me of a newsie. That's who it is.
Oh, she reminds me of that critically acclaimed comedian show that I can't remember the name of, that's got Monk in it.
Oh, it's not the show called Monk.
No.
Okay.
It's got also Mrs. Swan in it.
Oh, Mad TV?
Yeah. So the lady who plays Mrs. Swan is like the sidekick of the comedian lady whose father is Monk. It's famous, you guys, and I cannot for the life of me.
Okay, one second. Because this is the lady who does the voice of Lois on Family Guy.
Yes.
Yeah, so let's just go to the search.
If my brain gets there before your search fingers get there, I will be super impressed. I don't think it's going to happen. Okay.
Alex Borstein is the lady.
Uh-huh.
The marvelous Mrs. Maple?
Yep, okay. It is. It's exactly that.
Okay.
Tony Shalhoub.
Shalhoub, if you want to be corrective.
I wasn't being corrective. I was just telling you.
No, you're right. I'm sorry. Hmm. But like, does she not look like little Miss Alexis Borgnine or whatever you just said?
Sure.
Alex.
Yes. Alex Borstein.
Borstein. F***ing me. She's so cute and little butch. I like a little butch baby.
She is adorable. Also, like in a few scenes from now, we're going to see how much of a bad she is. She's willing to throw down.
Yeah. She's a middle child of six.
Mm-hmm.
And she run that family.
She really do. Yeah.
Ralph's not going to do shit.
No. All the other ones you rattled off ain't doing nothing either. Okay. So we get a judgmental moment from Fairuza. I'll just butcher her name. Fairuza Balk. Fairuza Balk.
I was trying to do the joke with the band.
Fairuza Balk.
Fairuza Balk.
Fairuza Balk. I will never. It's not a human name. So, and I doubt she'll ever hear this. And if she does hear this, hey, Fairuza.
You're great.
Yeah, you really are.
Yeah.
We love you so much. Please listen to what I'm much better in Return to Oz. But then we cut to the first rehearsal, I would assume. Not the first rehearsal, but they're all downstairs trying to get roles in the pageant. And then the six kids, I guess, maybe guessing that's where the cake is, wander downstairs, right? Mm-hmm. And they sit down and they start wanting to be part of it. And I mean, having worked with a small smattering of children, like an enthusiastic but dumb kid is still 100 times better than like a belligerent, like smart kid. You know, like, I don't do that because I don't like it. I do it this way. Honey, I don't care how you did it before. We are doing this now. Are you a team player? No? Well, then to the back.
Mm-hmm.
If a kid's like, I don't know shit about squat, but I'd like to squat on your shit. You're in. Let's do it. Gloves off, you know? No, gloves on. We're dealing with shit. But like, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
A good teacher invites the interested. mm-hmm. is what my notes say.
Right. But the important thing that you need to know, Applauders, because you're not seeing this movie, we're supposed to be telling it to you, is that all of the kids pick up from their seats and move away, and the herdmen's come down, and they, like, because they were painted up as like these bullies and everything. Uh-huh. And so the kids are like, it's framed as though these kids are scared of the herdmen's.
Yeah.
And the herdmen's kind of like take like multiple seats for themselves. They got like their feet on another seat and everything. Mm-hmm. They're kind of like, you know, hoarding stuff. And so
that's not untrue to life, by the way. I don't right. know if you've met kids whose whole identity is, yeah, no, I'm the bad kid.
Mm-hmm.
Like if they don't take up that space, they don't get space at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sad to watch. It's a true to life thing, and it sucks.
Right. And after the herdmen show up, all these other kids are saying things like, can't be a shepherd because of the fact that I'm going to be going on vacation. And Grace is like, well, why didn't you just say that at the beginning? Like, why are you even here if you can't be in the pageant? And then another kid's like, my mom said that I can't be a shepherd. It's like, why did she say that? I don't know. She just said that I couldn't. And then Charlie pipes up, and Charlie, who's Grace's son, says, I'm not being a shepherd. And she says, oh, yes, you are.
Yes. And then she says, who wants to be Mary, right? And mm-hmm. Emma Jean's like, I want to be Mary. And she's like, that's great. Who else wants to be Mary? Because she wants to choose from a number of girls. Well, none of them raise their hand, including the braggart little pretty girl. Mm-hmm. I say little. She's the tallest of them all, who always played Mary, right?
Mm-hmm. This is Alice?
Yeah.
Yeah. She's like, Alice? And she's like, she just doesn't say anything. It cuts to a scene where Alice is in the bathroom, and Emma Jean comes to her, and she's just like, you're not going to be Alice.
Right before this picking of Mary, we do see Imogene and Alice in the bathroom, and Alice walks away kind of sulking, like, oh, something's happening. And it's like one of the worst things about this film is the pacing and how everything's kind of shot together. It's very like, you know, like, and then this thing happened, you know.
Yeah, like you saw this little snippet that you would not for any right. reason remember. But remember, we cut away from it. Well, we're cutting mm-hmm. back to it now.
And here's the thing. We wouldn't have to, because there's a lot of film language that kind of like, as soon as they talk about like, they're going to be picking parts in the service before all of this, you know, Imogene perks up her ears when she hears about like, oh, there's going to be a part. She seems kind of interested in playing a part.
Any kid who's interested, and she is suddenly very interested.
Right. And I think at some point someone mentions that it's a story about Jesus, but it's really about Mary. Like, that's kind of the feel that yeah. a lot of the little girls are talking about, is that it's mostly a story about Mary. It's not really about Jesus.
Mm.
Yeah. It seemed like there was a conversation outside, or is that later with the kids?
I don't know. But what it seems like to me is middle, ignored, neglected, overbearing, responsible kid is like, it could be focused on me for a little while.
Right. It was like right after the service, probably before the kids getting together for the pageant. There was a scene outside between Beth, Imogene, and Alice. And Imogene's like, what's all this thing about this pageant? She's like, oh, well, it's the story of baby Jesus. And then Alice pipes in, well, it's really the story about Mary. And I'll probably be Mary because I'm always Mary. And
but Imogene, I like that she put in a probably.
Mm-hmm.
And then she gets hunted down to the bathroom by Imogene, who's just like, I'm going to put a pussy willow in your ear, and then I'm going to shove it so far in that nobody's ever going to be able to grab it. And then you're going to have pussy willows growing in your ear. I'm like, this is so bad and crazy. Like, could you imagine? Like, if she had said something akin to, and I'm going to shove a toilet brush so far up your ass that your colon's going to be so clean, they're going to be able to take microscopes up there and see the beginning of the universe. And her eyes cross, and they roll back at her head, and she, like, spits lava. Like, bitch is scared.
As a child, as the youngest of four girls who always watched this movie, this was the insult that we would lobby at other people. Like, I remember telling this to my sister, I'm going to put a pithy willow down, so far no. down here. And then, like, my sister would retort with, like, that's not possible, Lydia.
She's not wrong, but you're also not wrong.
It's also, like, the scariest of images. It's like, imagine just, like, this branch growing out of your ear and everything. And pussy willows are adorable. They're little fluffy things.
I ate too many watermelon seeds as a kid to be scared of this.
Right.
A watermelon's going to grow in your belly. Oh, really? In the acid, Karen? In the acid in my stomach, Karen? Like, pussy willows are going to grow in your ear. Oh, yeah? In the airless, sunless, soilless density of my brain tissue? Karen? Not that I was a genius kid, but I watch a lot of science shows. Now I know that you actually can. Did you hear about the guy who had like a... Did you or the... Who told me about the spruce growing in somebody's lung? Doesn't matter. Probably read it. Pussy willow ear. Church ladies are the worst.
Yeah. Yeah. So after the Herdman's, like Imogen pretty much says, I'm going to be Mary and Ralph's going to be Joseph. And then when they're passing out the parts for the wise men, nobody's putting up their hands, by the way. That's important. Nobody's coming in and saying, I'd like to go ahead and do it because they see these kids as being like the bullies.
Yeah. But Imogen's like, oh, you won't pick a part?
Right.
I'll pick a part for you.
Right. And like Leroy, Ollie and Claude are all like the wise men. And then but Gladys needs a part too. And so she's going to be the angel.
Yes. Yes. She's...
Yeah. Which comes in play later. But like after that moment, we see Beth and Alice talking about what was said in the bathroom. And then we see the church ladies and they do this really nice effect where you get four church ladies. They're all taking up a quarter of the screen and like each one gets a moment to kind of talk and it really shows their personalities. One's like saying, I don't understand how this could happen. How could this have happened? This is just the worst thing ever. And then another's like, well, if you can't get rid of them, you could at least ask them to pass out the pamphlets. And then the third lady's like, I'm just saying, you gotta lock down everything, including the silverware.
Yes. And then doesn't it go from them to the original director youth lady yeah. who's just like, and I feel so guilty. If I hadn't broken my leg, I wasn't holding up in the hospital, blah, blah, blah. Just awful. Like, just, I get running your mouth, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I certainly do on this podcast a lot, but the idea of being like, those children who want to participate, they should be shamed for being slovenly and rude. And we as a church don't accept the slovenly and rude. Who the f*** are you?
I know. It's like they only want certain people to participate in their church gatherings.
Look, if you only took perfectly working cars to the mechanic, it would seem like a whole lot different mm-hmm. than what really a church is meant to do.
Right.
Well, that was a mixed metaphor. You know what I'm saying, though, right?
God doesn't catch us perfect. God catches us broken. And really, we're never really going to be perfect.
No. Mm-hmm. No. There's a plan. A church is the place for you to go when you need guidance. And if you go to church ready to go, mm-hmm. you are not in a place to receive instruction. These kids know they're jacked up. I've never known a jacked up kid who didn't know they're jacked up. I don't know a reasonable adult who doesn't know that they're jacked up.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that they're like, we're here. We might be here for the wrong reasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, selfish reasons, but who doesn't show up places for selfish reasons? And the fact that these ladies can't see it, they've got it all together. They have their roles. They have this idea of what, sorry, that was hitting a 4 on the 10. Taking it back.
Yeah.
Basically, not taking it back. I mean it. Taking it back down to some children's are like, I want to be in a play. And the lady's like, you shouldn't. And it's like, they're wrong.
I would also like to note the totally 80s way that they've split the screen between the church ladies talking on the phone. You don't have four squares. You have like this X going through and each one has a triangle and you only see that on 80s TV.
It's true. It's true. And you can tell it wasn't a group call. It was just supposed to be the fact that they were all calling each other like nosy Nellies and like Pollyanna types.
Right. So basically what we're saying, church ladies are... And Grace ain't having any of it because she is like, I think when the lady who broke her leg comes on, she's like, this is just the worst thing. We're going to have to cancel it. And then we cut to Grace brushing her teeth, talking angry to her husband, saying, they're not going to cancel it. This is not going to happen. This is going to be the best Christmas pageant ever.
Roll credits, which is stolen from CinemaSins. Please yeah. watch that YouTube channel. yeah. And I'm like, that lady.
Right.
And then, okay, so we're starting rehearsals now.
Mm-hmm.
A little girl is down at the bottom of the stairs drinking some grape juice out of a bottle.
Right.
She walks away and then nosy Miss Nelly,
mm-hmm.
whose name I don't remember.
Not worthy to remember.
She pulls out a notepad and she writes it down.
Yeah, and she's just like, and then we go into rehearsal and that's when all of the kids are kind of getting around and talking about.
Yes. They don't know the story at all. And so,
no. So
Hot Lips, Grace, no, Grace?
Grace,
Grace,
yeah.
Grace, she's like, you know what I do? She does it really great educator style. She's like, you don't know the story. You want to be a participant, but you don't know the story. You know what we can do? Let's read the story.
Mm-hmm.
So she grabs the book. Everyone's like, except for the kids who are like, yeah, we want to be in the play, but we don't know the story. They all sit down and they're all ready to listen to her. And I'm like, yeah, Grace knows what's up.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so she pretty much rattles off the story of Jesus. And it's, you know.
And the angel of the Lord said unto them. And then.
But before we get there, there's a few things. Like she says, well, Mary was great with child. And they're like, what does that mean? And then she's like, and then Imogene comes up and says, Ralph says this, where he's like, pregnant. It means she was pregnant. And then all of the kids laugh. And then Alice says to Beth, I wouldn't go ahead and talk about Mary being pregnant, especially not in church. Like, oh, I'm so much better than that.
Pregnant people be in church all the time.
But the highlight of this whole moment is when she talks about the angel saying, hark, the herald angel sang or something. And then Gladys stands up and does what?
Shazam! I'm here to tell you about Jesus, and he's in Bethlehem.
Well, I think she's referring to the comic Shazam.
She was talking about some specifically comic, like, I didn't write it down. It was like, it might be specific to the universe because it didn't seem terribly familiar. But she's like, oh, appears out of the darkness.
Right.
Appears out of the darkness and is like, here's information.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I'm going to do it like that. And she's like, no, you're just supposed to show up and be like, lo, unto you a child is born. Right. And she's like, no, there's darkness, right? And shepherds, right? And
yeah.
She's like, yeah. And she's like, and then there's an angel there, right?
Right.
And she's like, yeah. And she's like, Shazam!
It reminds her of a comic book character.
Yeah, and why wouldn't it?
Right.
I mean, angel of the Lord, let's let glory shine through, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's great. So then they move on from that.
I've got one more note. Yeah. Grace is totally Michelle Pfeiffering from Dangerous Minds this classroom. Okay.
That's good.
I've never watched Dangerous Minds.
We're spending most our lives living in a gangster's paradise.
It was a movie about the teacher.
Oh, no, wait. I've seen Dangerous Minds. Yeah. Well, I've at least seen Gangster's Paradise. Yeah.
Right.
Sorry. For a second, I was thinking when you said Michelle Pfeiffer, I went to Dangerous Suspects. Wherever she crosses her legs.
Oh, that was...
That's Sharon Stone in Basic Instinct.
I'm not sorry. Keep it in. So anyways, yeah, I was like, what the hell movie are you watching? No, she totally is. She's like, let me break it down for your kids. All of that white lady in that movie about some black guys. I got
you. Yo, Miss Grace, I'm never going to ever understand the story of Jesus and Luke. And then she figures it out how to explain it to them.
She's like, did you ever notice that the book of Luke is like a rap?
Please don't give any like hardcore conservative Christians who are trying to find a way to make Jesus like super hip.
In the west side of Bethlehem, I wasn't born and raised. In the manger was where my mama dada had me laid.
Oh, by the way, they did explain in that little scene there that like Herod is not in the play.
Right. They were trying to assign
Herod to Charlie, sure. And he was and then they were like, but the three wise men, we're gonna go back to Herod and go ahead and like get him. And then Charlie's like, see, they're going to kill me.
Yeah. She's like, there's not gonna be any Herod.
Right. And then they start like taking a plank of wood and doing that.
Also, they explain that the three boys are gonna be the three wise men, right? And they're like, okay, you're gonna bring gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And the kid's like, what's frankincense? Right?
Yeah.
And I remember turning to you being like, that's funeral incense.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Well, in my learning, it was this prophetess thing. He was going to be sacrificed. So they sent the frankincense to show that he was going to be sacrificed for his people. Right. But then we were watching it together and you're like, it's because they were going to kill him.
Well, I don't know. I haven't like delved into this side of history, but like, I think the wise men were originally sent to at least like let Herod know this is where Jesus is.
Yeah. And that makes a lot of sense because then later on when she's quoting the scripture, which I've heard, they did not go back by the way of Herod.
Right.
Like, but like,
Maybe it was like their way of saying, hey, here are all of these fancy oils that we are giving to your son. You know, all these oils that have some very specific meanings about death.
I mean, the Messiah had a whole plan.
Tell me how you're going to kill the Messiah without telling me that you're going to kill the Messiah.
Okay, like 75% of me is mad at you right now, but like 25% of me wants to like give you respect, Knuckles, for making a TikTok reference that you just this side of understand. So I'm going to withhold, but there's some respect there, a begrudging respect.
Put a finger down if you think Jesus should.
How do you know you watch too much TikTok?
Jen doesn't watch any TikToks. Jen just listens to me watching TikToks. That's how bad it is. Okay, so is it the same meeting? Is it a different meeting? I don't know, because it only really looks like two meetings. But then they cut to Emma Jean, smoking in the bathroom. She's got like a big old stogie, and she's like...
Right, and that was the first time we see her smoking in the bathroom.
Yes.
And then Alice comes out with the notepad and like...
Is it Alice?
Yeah, it's because this is the first time we see it. The second time we see it is later on when they're actually doing the dress rehearsal.
We'll return for part two of our review of 1983's The Best Christmas Pageant Ever next week, Applauder. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.